And good afternoon. It is 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, in the first hour, you'll hear from a, first thing you'll hear is from a novel idea bookstore book launch event. You'll hear Y.S. Lee reading from and launching her illustrated children's book called Mrs. Nobody. And then following that from this year's Poets at Art Fest four-day outdoor poetry festival, you're going to hear three readings in the first hour and then three readings in the second. In the first hour, you'll hear readings by Lori Voss, Joel Giroux, and Ron Chase. And in the second hour, again, from that 2025 Poets at Art Fest outdoor music, poetry, I don't know why I said music, poetry festival, you'll hear readings by Meg Freer, Calista Markotich, and Jane McDonald. Top of the hour thing I try to mention is that occasionally some poetry, music, or spoken word played on this show may contain strong language, and I try to preserve that as much as I can to honor the integrity of both the work and the poet, writer, or composer themselves. So let's go ahead and just jump first into, again, this was an April 27th book launch event at Novel Idea Bookstore. You'll hear, again, Y.S. Lee reading from and launching her children's illustrated book called Mrs. Nobody. And Sarah Mitsiang also joins her in the reading because there's a second voice in it as well. So let's go ahead and just jump right into that now.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for coming on this beautiful day. My name is Ying Li, and thank you for coming to celebrate the launch of Mrs. Nobody. I just want to say a couple of very quick thank yous before we get going. First of all, to Novel Idea, the amazing staff for, you know, letting us the space. And this is, of course, Indie Booksellers Weekend. So thank you for coming here and their support. We really appreciate it. All the writers in Kingston are so grateful for Novel Idea. Second, my family for living through the reign of terror that was Mrs. Nobody for still being here with me. Thirdly, everyone who read this book in advance, including my writing group, the Villanelles, of which Sarah and Christine and where is
Julianne.
She? Julianne is at the back there. Yeah. Thank you for this. That's wonderful. Team at Groundwood who published it, and finally to all of you for coming out. It's a really strange time to be working in the arts, and I'm so grateful to those of you who still believe in stories and art and the power of art to make connections and bring us closer as a community. So thank you so much for that. Okay, so I'm going to quickly introduce Sarah Yimei Tiang, who doesn't need an introduction for some of you, but for those of you who are new to her work, she is a multi-award-winning poet. She is the writer of picture books, a graphic novel that is in the works, and she has another picture book coming out next year from Orca Books, which is called When the Clouds
Came.
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry. Terrible writing. And she's going to be reading with me today, because this is a book with two voices. All right, so without further ado, here is Mrs. Nobody. And the art in this book is by Marie LaFrance, who lives in Montreal and is not here today, but who's, I think she's brilliant. So,
do you want me to show the air where you did?
Please, yeah. Alice's friend, Mrs. Nobody, has the best ideas. Mrs. Nobody draws on walls with stinky markers. She eats toothpaste, strawberry, not mint. Once, she made confetti out of some old paper that was just lying around in a wallet. When Alice wakes in the night, Mrs. Nobody sings with her in a big, brave voice. Mrs. Nobody teaches her to climb the very highest branches. Mrs. Nobody doesn't put her face in the swimming pool either. Mrs. Nobody never washes her hands, but always says she has. She cuts Alice's hair, lots of it. She lies and lies and lies and lies. Alice loves her. After lunch, Mrs. Nobody jingles the leash.
Time to play puppy.
Again? Asks Alice. Mrs. Nobody loops the leash around Alice.
Let's go for a walk.
But I was puppy all morning.
So?
Alice says, it's your turn to be puppy.
But I'm the owner,
says Mrs. Nobody. Can't I be the owner? Asks Alice. Mrs. Nobody tugs firmly.
Come on, pup.
Can we play something else?
Bad puppy!
Alice unties the leash. Well, Mrs. Nobody shrieks so loudly. That was awesome. That Alice's skin buzzes. Mrs. Nobody slams the front door so hard that the whole house shivers. Then it is quiet. At bedtime, it's hard to fall asleep. When Alice wakes, it is still dark. She still feels lonely. After a while, she starts to sing in a small, brave voice. It's not the same, but she does go back to sleep. Before sunrise, Mrs. Nobody is on the porch. Alice trembles with happiness. I missed you.
Time for a walk, puppy.
Alice steps back. I'm tired of being puppy.
You have to.
Alice draws a deep breath. I don't, she says. The words feel enormous in her mouth, but sound tiny in the air. I'm not playing puppy anymore. The silence is a thick, cold fog. Then, Mrs. Nobody starts to howl.
If you say no again, I'll hate you forever! I'll go away and you'll never, ever find me. You'll never see me again, not for your whole life.
Alice's stomach twists inside out. Her bones want to crumple. But deep inside, she remembers singing by herself in a small, brave voice. And with that same brave voice, she says, no.
I have to be the boss,
Mrs. Nobody insists.
My ideas are the best.
Alice wipes her eyes. Your ideas are excellent, she explains, but mine are too.
What? Really?
Remember the day I made it rain? Asks Alice.
That was excellent,
admits Mrs. Nobody. And what about the chickadee party? Mrs. Nobody sighs and smiles. Then she asks,
what should we do now?
Alice's stomach flips the right way out. We should have ice cream for breakfast. Alice and Mrs. Nobody always talk in their outdoor voices. They trample their snow fort. It was mostly an accident. They decorate all the grown-up books. Alice and Mrs. Nobody have the best ideas.
Good job!
Thank you.
That was lovely.
Thank you.
And Sarah Tang as Mrs. Nobody.
I feel really, really embodied.
I feel her pain, yeah.
That repressed rage.
All right. Thank you so much for coming. For children who came and who would need to make a quick escape, please don't go without taking a loot bag. It contains a design your own imaginary friend little kit. There's a sugar cookie and some decorations. The sticky stuff is up to you, because for some reason Oscar did not want us grinding icing into his carpet. I don't know. Very strange. But yeah, please grab one of those on your way out if you have to go. I'm happy to answer questions for those who can stay. Happy to sign books and chit-chat. And it's thank you so much for coming out.
And you just heard from a spring book launch, was held April 27th at Novel Idea Bookstore, Y.S. or Ying Lee, read from and launch her children's illustrated book called Mrs. Nobody with Sarah Yeme Siang, who joined her as the second voice in the book. And coming up next, we're going to jump back in. We've done this for a couple of weeks now, I believe. We'll jump into the Poets at the Art Fest. I don't know why I keep wanting to say music. Poetry Festival that just happened the first the holiday weekend in July, and you're going to hear what I usually do is go pretty chronologically, but it seems like this year I'm going to be jumping around quite a bit just to make things fit the hours better. So coming up, actually, first, you're going to hear from the last segment from the last day of the festival, and you will hear readings by Lori Voss and Joel Giroux. Let me make sure I've got this set up right here. And yeah, I believe we're good to go. Let's go ahead and jump into that now. Here we go. Lori Voss has been an instructor of academic writing at Queen's University for over 20 years. Creatively, she has been writing in several genres: children's literature, short fiction, poetry, and creative nonfiction. Publications include poetry, short fiction, songs written in collaboration with musicians, and a book of memoir called Coming Home, a Spiritual Memoir, published in 2022. Lori is grateful to have lived her life on the shores of Lake Ontario in both Niagara and Kingston, which has given her a wide view that speaks of both rest and possibility. Let's bring up Lori.
Thank you, Bruce, for inviting me to this wonderful event, and thank you all for coming and listening. I find poems most often in nature, in people I know and observe, in the spiritual dimension of life, and in the sacredness of the ordinary. It's this last theme, the holiness of ordinary life, that I'll focus on today. And really, the ordinariness of everyday life. So just so you know, peeling an egg. Sunlight falls through the kitchen window, illuminating the fine warm grain of the cherry wood cutting board. Above it, the egg, full, round, starkly white, is cupped and held by light's fingers until mine take and wrap it against the wood. The caving of its shell is a small crunching sound. I tap and roll and watch the spreading lines. Chips of white scatter across the brown surface. Light bathes us all. Hands, board, shell, shiny albumen beneath, softens the undoing, the quiet, unhurried revealing. You're welcome to save your applause till the end. That would be quite fine. As you wish. Close of the day. Early morning, half waking into shadows, caught in the dimness where strands of light and darkness still knit, hold a quiet not yet broken. It comes, the surge of feelings. A swallowing loneliness opens its maw. Shame corrodes my spirit with its hot breath of lies. I utter a small, silent soul cry for mercy. Sense the darkness shift, dim tangle loosening. The sun, a stylus, traces a line of light along my pillow's edge. A summons to rise to the promise of outdoor air, moisture-laden after a night rain. To honey-scented soap, the tang of sweet orange bursting on my tongue. Blankets cast aside, my feet find warm floorboards. Water wakens scalp and skin. I don the clothes of the day. Linen slides across my shoulders. Denim hugs my hips. Threads of conversation spooling out pull me downstairs into the weave of gestures, glances, touch. Steaming mug on the counter, cheek brushed against mine. The sweet comforts of incarnation. The binding up of love. Clothed in this new day, I feel hope stir. Tomorrow, maybe, the darkness will not be so deep. These grapefruit trees have been growing in pots in my living room since I started them from seed many years ago. They strain toward the feeble northern light filtering through the curtains on this gray October day. Far from the heavy, moist heat of the tropics, from the blazing sun, they are challenged in this stark habitat. Their roots are housed in meager soil bound by cylinders of clay. They will likely never make it past the 3 feet the tallest one has reached. Still, they do their best to grow as living things will despite being caged or displaced. They drop the leaves that have suffered too much water, wait for dried up branches to be pruned, send out new shoots when the maple outside loses its leaves and the light inside grows stronger. I do my best for them when I notice them drooping. I feed them water and sometimes more. Every few years I may summon the energy to replace their soil and give them bigger pots, or I may not. Together we struggle toward the sun or sleep in the darkness. We take in sustenance when we can and give what beauty we have. We have been long companions now, and I think we are patient with each other. We'll care for each other in our ways while we are here. This poem is about as ordinary task in life as it's possible to get. So this one is called Dusting. Dust dims the desk surface in the living room. I've watched it gather as darkness tangles in flowers outside at dusk. This morning I meet it with a square of damp flannel, brush it from a painting a friend admired long ago. I think of her each time I wipe these dabs of color, these ridged brush strokes from the film of our lives, from the fine flakes our bodies make as we breathe and touch, sink into deep cushions and each other. I find a new cloth for the dust in the bedroom, thick with rest and dreaming, with loving. In the dining room, drips from candles soft with burning have made circles on the floor. I scrape a thumbnail across grooved oak, lifting strips of wax. rise to brush crumbs from the table with the mound of my palm. Smile at the small collection I hold, the sweet carelessness of living. Dust, wax, crumbs, welcome. Keep layering, keep falling, keep gathering. Who knew dusting could be so fascinating? And this is about laundry. This is an excerpt from my memoir, Coming Home, a spiritual memoir, which is available here. This is part of a personal essay called Touchstones, which is about life in Kingston. Today is laundry day, and I'm heading to the laundromat. As always, I take my car. Doing laundry only once every 3 weeks means I have mountains of clothes to haul there and back. I gather soap and change, sort the clothes into whites and darks, and heave the baskets into the car. After I pull up outside the laundromat, I struggle through the March slush, prop a basket on my hip, and swing myself through the front door. The place is quiet today. I pack my clothes into two triple loaders and get additional change from Mike at the front desk. The familiar swish of water begins in a washer as I settle in a chair with my book. Morning light is falling through the window at my back onto the long table in front of me. Though no one else is in my alley, the head and shoulders of a young man poke up from behind the machines in the next one. He has a dark beard and glasses, buds in his ears, and a leather university jacket. A woman with frizzled brassy hair trudges by. She has piles of clothes as large as mine and searches out the other triple loaders. Soon a burst of chatter at the front door signals the entrance of two young women, more students. Later I pull warm clothes from the dryers, heap shirts and pajamas and socks on a table, and move into the rhythm of folding. I bring a sweater to my face and breathe in its fresh scent. Then I place it on its front before me, tuck its sleeves behind, and fold it in half to make a square before starting a pile in the basket. As I work the fabric of each article through my hands, feeling and shaping it, I am carried by touch and motion into a flow like prayer. The hum of the washing machines and the steady, soft thumping of clothes in the dryers accompany me in this hymn to the ordinary. To this loose, fluid community, brought together only by the shared necessities of the body. Being surrounded by people outside my normal circle of friends and colleagues, everyone engaged in the intimate task of washing clothes, comforts and connects me, affirms that we are all in this undertaking of life together. And I'll leave you with something a little bit different. This one is called Searching. For joy, you sing sprays of stars into galaxies. In tenderness, you tremble in the tear of a child. For righteousness, you burn in the fierce exhilaration of linked arms and marching feet. In longing, you send thought whispers, like dandelion fluff in springtime, drifting through fields and concrete canyons, searching for a place to land. Thanks very much.
Up next.
Joel Giroux is a poet, teacher, tutor, late-blooming singer-songwriter, and wannabe ghostwriter who has worked as a college English prof, an intervener with persons with deaf blindness, and in the trades as a hydronics installer. He is the author of two chapbooks and has been published in Exister, Inc. Magazine, the UC Review, the Trinity College Review, the Quarantine Review, in the recent anthology More Than a Gathering, Wedding Books 2024, and has had his work read on Jazz FM 91 by the late, great Rainier Schwartz, and was long listed for the CBC Poetry Prize in 2006. He is currently working on his first full collection entitled Silent Poet Miscellany. He teaches ESL at Lee Hurst College and works at Novel Idea Bookstore, both here in Kingston. Let's bring up Joel.
Thank you, Bruce. It's always a pleasure to be a part of this reading. I'm going to say something. Whenever Bruce comes in the store, I always greet him with the Springsteen greeting. And so I think we should always think, Bruce is how I react as soon as he comes in the door, because he got that kind of power. So for me, developing as a poet, I think one of the things is deep dive into language, deep dive into tradition or traditions. So for me, falling in love with Middle English when I was doing my BA led to Old English for the Masters. This is a quarter of a century ago now. And went back to it a few years ago. So I've translated some of those poems. And this one is called The Wife's Lament. And being Old English, it is sort of a tragic love tale that gets a little dark in a few spots. So I'm just going to read a few lines in the Old English. I'm not going to give you the full 55. But just to give a sense of it, the wife's lament. Each this ye da reka, be mi ful ye omora, min rasul frasith. Each that sech in my, watch. Each urm thayabad, see then each up veox, nevas otha thialdas, no ma thon anew. Now my version goes something like this. My life has been a riddle whose grand sadness I can't help but speak. If I can, I'll tell it all, the living grief I've gone through. Since I became a woman, of hardships old and new, that have never grieved me more than they do now. I've always known struggle, the miserable path of an exile, ever since my man left the land of his family to sail over the wash of the waves. Every morning I wept in that place where my man had once stood. When I went to and left my home to find him, wandering alone to heal my broken heart, his family began to plot a secret plan to keep us apart, as unhappily far apart as we might be, and for me to forever live lovesick and alone. My man had demanded I keep a cottage in a quiet grove. I had so few dear friends there. My sadness grew greater when I found out that my lord, sweetly melancholy, full of love, that my lord, when he leaned on me, kept his true heart concealed. Behind his sweet face, he hid a mind dreaming murderous revenge. So many times the two of us vowed we'd always be together, that only death could part us, nothing else. But that was then. Now, it's as if our bond of marriage had never been. Near or far, wherever I go, the war my husband waged follows me. I was condemned to live in a wooded grove, in a deep pit under an oak, an old hole in the earth. All I am now is sad, living in a joyless home ringed round with dark valleys and towering mountains, behind a bitter hedge overgrown with briars. All of it drains my joy. My lord's leaving me has left nothing but a cruel kind of living. My friends are all buried, all my beloved ones. They keep earthen beds while I walk alone before daybreak beneath this oak. There I can sit all the summer long day. There I can spill tears for all that's befallen me. For all of these things, I can never let go my sorrow, can never let go all that this life has brought. From now on, that young man will be haunted by sadness. He will look as heartless as he once looked joyous. His cares will only be sorrows. He will wear all his past sins against me wherever he goes, rejected by everyone he loves, his heart full of fear. My once lover will sit by himself below a steep cliff, covered in storm frost, surrounded by a wall of water, always thinking back on the joys of his once home. His heart will sink. Weep for him. Weep for the one who will only ever wait for love's return. So that's the old English. Oh, thank you. So in the last 15 years, translation has become a bit of an addiction. And I was in Montreal a number of years ago, and I found this anthology of 100 best poems or 100 most loved poems from Quebec. And it runs the whole gamut from the oldest to very contemporary poets and writers. So this is by Néré Beauchemin, who was a late Romantic poet. His dates are 1850 to 1931. He was, like William Carlos Williams, poet and doctor. And this is the poem, I think, that it was the signature poem for Néré Beauchemin. I am going to make my way through it in the French. Let's see how this goes. It's called La Mer. Loin des grands rochers noirs qui baisent la marée, la mer calme, la mer au murmure endormeur, au large, tout là-bas, lance et retirée, et son sanglot d'amour dans l'air de soi se meurte. La mer fauve, la mer vierge, la mer sauvage, au profond de son lit de nacre inviolé, redescend. Pour dormir, loin, bien loin du rivage, sous le seul regard pur de doux ciel étoilé. La mer aime le ciel. C'est pour mieux lui redire, à l'écart, en secret, son immense tourment, que le fauve amadeuse au large se retire, dans son lit de corail, d'ambre et diamants. Et la brise n'apporte à la terre jalouse qu'un souffle chuchoteur, vague, délicieux. L'âme des océans frémit comme une épouse sous la chaste baiser des impassibles cieux. I read it to you in the original French out of selfishness, because those of you, I'm sure there's at least one, who has a better grasp of French than I do. So when I read my translation, you just give me any assistance you can. This is a recent one. So I don't know if there's any howlers in it, but I have a sense that there may be. My intermediate French might not have done it absolute justice. So this is The Sea. Far from the towering black rocks that kiss the tide, the calm sea, the sea murmuring like one asleep, offshore, down fathoms deep, slowly recedes, and her lovesick sobbing into the night air has died. The wild sea, virginal sea, savage sea, in the depths of her bed of untouched pearl, descends again into sleep. Far, far off from shore, below the gentle skies, star-filled gaze, ever pure. The sea adores the sky. For him, it's best to repeat, away from her, in secret, the immensity of his torment, that his wild lover retreats back out to sea, into her bed of coral and amber and diamond. And the breeze will not bring to the jealous earth that one whisper of a breath, vague, delicious. The soul of the oceans shuddering like a spouse below the chaste kiss of a heavens we cannot traverse. So that's my version. So for me, from the beginning, poetry and song have been like parallel tracks, parallel inspiration. Leonard Cohen has always been an exemplar of that. So writing poems and songs has always been there for me. I have finished fewer songs than I have poems over the years. So in the last 2 years or so, one of the promises to myself was to finish some of them. And songs and get them out there. So there are 7 up on SoundCloud under my name. These are the lyrics to one of them called Ballad of the Lovers in the Sea, and this is the overarching theme to what I've been reading, right? Lovers in the Sea. So we'll see how well those go as read lyrics. Leonard Cohen said, oh, this is terrible. He said, I wanted to write lyrics that could be sung but would live on the page too. Yeah, so that's the goal. Aim high. Ballad of the Lovers in the Sea. She said, tell me a tale where love comes to no inevitable end. Where the lovers prevail, set sail on seas that send them out and back again. Their bodies make a boat, stern and bow, help keep each other afloat. He said, I'll tell you a tale of two who lived as one, a lifetime near the sea. And then one day, the ocean raised her arms and dragged them both away. In a blink, they became both lifeboat and grave, both lost and saved. She said, my love, you've told me a tale whose end will surely break my heart and send me far away. Your lover's travails can only serve to sever my ever deciding to stay. The silence will be my friend, the dark, my lover. He always takes me back again. He said, my love, I told you the tale I tell you every night before bed without fail. We make our home down here in the deep, only water to wall our room. We only sleep. We only dream. We dream the life we knew before when we lived on the shore. Thank you. Okay. What? So, this last one is sticking with the theme. The tone, I think, is turning a little bit to another direction. The last number of years, narrative poetry under this overarching idea of impossible loves has been important. So this one, I was revising last night at 11 o'clock. So we'll, again, see how this works. Just a caveat, as somebody who considers himself a Christian of the more heretical bent, if we want to divide things up into orthodox and heretic, this is a little satirical. I would like you to think of it as written and read out of irreverent reverence. The pastor and the parish organist. The pastor told the parish's new organist that his desire was all God's will. The organist lay down to feverishly agree. The congregation, however, discovering the two of them one exuberant Sunday morning, pulsing as one in the rectory garden under an arbor bound tight with blushing roses whose red blooms were eternally vining heavenward, demurred. The thorny stems had caught the hem of her dress and lifted it over her head to her gasping relief, her hearty yes. The pastor pursued upon her heaving person the push and pull of ecclesiastical call and response. Witnesses to such pre-Edenic bliss as this, the lady's auxiliary were less than nonplussed. He said, "I really shouldn't stand." So he addressed his frowning flock from the horizontal pulpit of the ground. Still on his belly, he lifted up his head and told them a story even God thought original. He rhapsodized how his and the organist's entangled limbs were like hands come together in prayer, whose twining firm fingers were divinely cupped to catch the heaving blossoms fallen from thorny rose bushes, which had been, only moments before, fervently shaking above them, which had shaken in turn, the earth under them, and under the church, and under the tall, scalloped fountain at the center of the garden, suddenly spraying its jets, which had been cautiously decommissioned years before out of a parish-wide fear of its relentless, wild, orgiastic gushing. Everyone breathed a sigh of relief when the archbishop arrived to finally twist the fountain's spigot to the right. Now water was again ubiquitous as a flood, and no one knew how to turn off its release. They collectively agreed to retreat back into the nave, to repair the scene by repeating chaste verses from their knees, hymnals open, lifted up to their faces, exhaling only, until the gushing fountain and shaking foundation were calmed. The organist was asked to leave and never return. Exiled from the garden, she walked away from the roses and into her inevitable shame. But the pastor, they marched out of the garden and along a secret path, parched of flowers, thick only with standing thistle, and home into the vestibule through a back entrance some unidentified someone had left prophetically open. Thank you very much.
And you just heard readings from this year's Poets at Art Fest, 4-day poetry outdoor festival. And you heard readings by Lori Voss and Joel Giroux. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, you will still hear in this first hour a reading from that festival by Ron Chase. But I'll tell you what, it is 43 minutes after 4 o'clock. We should probably do this first, and I'll be right back.
Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
Hey, hey, hey! You want to kick the summer heat and get a nice treat? Don't hesitate to make a date to visit Old Farm Fine Foods. Pizza, frittata, sausage rolls, sandwiches, soups, and more are ready and waiting to get in your belly. Plus, you can also buy fresh and frozen food to prepare at home. Pop into the shop Monday through Sunday between 8 to 6 at 204 Berry Street. And don't forget to follow Old Farm Fine Foods on Instagram at OldFarmFF to get the scoop on the latest goodies. Old Farm Fine Foods, comfort food you can count on.
Morning, Kingston. This is your Indie Wake-Up Call. Playing anything new and everything indie. Garage rock, hip-hop, folk, punk, and electropop. New, Canadian, and even local. Indie Wake-Up handles your morning. Here for you, Kingston. Weekday mornings from 8 to 10. On the one, the only, CFRC 101.9 FM.
And you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. Up next, we're going to move back. I should probably do the time. It is just turned 46 minutes after 4 o'clock. We're going to move in for one more reading that will end this hour, and then I'll be right back at the end of that for just a short minute or so and introduce then the next hour. But the next poet you're going to hear from, again, the Poets at Art Fest, 4-day outdoor poetry festival that was held less than a month ago. The next poet you're going to hear from that is Ron Chase, and here he is right now.
We have Ron Chase. He's a Kingston area poet whose work can be read in various literary journals and anthologies, and he can be found late at night hunched over a tiny black desk writing truths that hide during the day, or testing new work at open mic nights and literary events. Let's bring up Ron Chase.
Empty room. Alone in a chair where family used to sit, where laughter and tears once rested with equal ease. He sat sifting through the sand in his box, digging for any remembrance, any small grain of his yellow-stained life. Across his nubby fingers and papery skin, a warm band of light from a small tear in his frail curtain nudged his spotted hand with love. He smiled. He was a boy again, standing in the summer sun, holding a cane pole in an epic battle with a catfish half his size. The sun sizzled on the water and poked playfully through the holes in his frayed straw hat. Old forgotten friends cheered in a frenzy along the shoreline. "Pull it in, pull it in," he laughed and startled himself. The band of light faded with a passing cloud. He wondered if he had caught that fish. If only he had one more minute in the sun. He saw a black and white photo hanging on the wall, looking back at him silently from its place above a shelf, holding knickknacks and someone's memories. A couple in front of a 1922 Model T Roadster. The young man's face looked familiar and proud. The young woman left him breathless. She was the most beautiful thing he had ever seen. A forgotten ache echoed in his chest. An unexplained tear ran down his cheek, like a stray dog that everyone but him knew. He hoped they were happy. She deserved to be happy. He could tell the young man thought so too. He wasn't sure the young man was worthy, but he could tell from her smile that she knew he was. He hoped he had never let her down, but he no longer knew. Autumn. He watched an ancient sun slowly drift from the sky, the same sky that gave warmth and light and life to his endless line of grandfathers since the beginning. That same sun that would watch him grow and decay and die like everything that ever grew beneath it. He stood amongst age-old trees, his roots as deep as theirs, his leaves scattered on the wind and the forest floor, each one a thought or memory or failed dream that was no longer attached. Litter for the next generation. He stood near the end of his changing seasons, his only movement, the result of an autumn wind rushing home for the night. Ignoring the dusk that wrapped itself around his shadow, he wondered in the darkness if the trees remembered their leaves, or if they were content to grow new ones every time they awoke. Poems in a drawer of a dusty desk. Notebooks, scraps of paper, handfuls of promises, desires, dreams, and misguided thoughts. Sacred scriptures pushed into a drawer locked away from prying eyes and non-believers. An archaeology in the making. My Dead Sea Scrolls to be discovered and interpreted and misunderstood by travelers and scholars who presume. Arrogantly unaware of the truths in their hands that may never have been true at all. Half-truths. Sitting on a green porch swing, I feel the embrace of a breeze that once pushed me without effort. A breeze as old as light and life. It tries to treat me the way it always did, but I feel the difference. Going through the motions, reading a script on how to comfort the inconsolable. Insincere, almost lying. Still, I feel better. Half-truths and warm arms are sometimes enough. When the breeze stops, there is no comfort at all. New at being old. He was new at being so old. Only yesterday he was young, vital. Middle age was a distant ship, barely visible on the horizon. He was convinced the young woman stocking the meat at No Frills was checking him out. She was a professional. She was a professional. She knew a good side of beef when she saw it. Today, he sneezed and threw out his back. He forgot the password for his online banking. His belly decided to try to hide his belt buckle. And he stood for an eternity in his kitchen in a Fender t-shirt and torn boxers trying to remember why he was there in the first place. Being old will take some practice. The table. The squeal of the dryer ending its cycle floated up the basement stairs, overpowering the sobbing silence that attached itself to him as he sat at a bare wooden table with too many empty chairs. The stained glass light hanging low burned his eyes like the afternoon sun. Everyone always complained about that light, hovering over family dinners and reunions and homework and Trivial Pursuit and Trivial Pursuits. He was the only one left under that blinding beacon, sitting at the time-pock table with the empty chairs and an empty bottle and the memories and the silence and a pen. A cartoon at a stoplight. He had red hair and was tall. I only knew him for a few seconds. The length of time it took to walk in front of my motionless car while I was debating on whether to finish my trek to work. But he didn't actually walk. It was too cool to walk. His hands were pushed deep into his pockets. No need to use his arms for balance. That takes some confidence. He formed a clever spring by driving his head forward and arching his back to absorb all motion. His head maintained a perfectly level line. No bobbing up and down, no swagger. Yet the tufts of hair from under his cool dude hat made fine blazing motion lines shoot out behind him, like a cartoon of a ball flying through the air. His flipper-like feet slapped the pavement, heel to toe, heel to toe, heel to toe, as his legs made circular steps like he was riding some invisible bicycle. He moved past the black SUV beside me. I never saw him again. Dance. Making dinner in the kitchen, as people do, she turned to get a spoon or a pot or some salt. He stepped into her arms and they danced. No music, no rhythm, they just danced. They didn't stop until they smelled something burning that they were certain wasn't them. The cathedral. The old man sat in front of a holy fire, an altar built from a rusty tire rim abandoned in a ditch. On a pew made of a Picasso painted lawn chair that was left at the side of an aching street beneath a sign with the word free written commonly in red marker. The wind sang ancient hymns and blew whirly-burly, making the dry wood glow and snap emphatic amens with the choir of the night. The embers passed white light from one to another like candles in a cathedral. His cathedral. He slowly sipped the Holy Spirit, waiting for God to join him. He waited until the fire went out, and his chalice was as empty as he. It appeared God had another engagement. Darkness fell. Tickle. She tickled his fancy, and he was happy about that. At his age, getting anything tickled is a win. And I'll finish off with this one, the white birch. A white birch stood the way trees do in the middle of a yard, not quite centered, but more to the right, planted by some unknown tree lover at some forgotten time. It has always been there, watching things grow up around it, houses and children and fences, never complaining, just watching. As seasons blew past like leaves on the wind, an endless cycle of days becoming nights, becoming days. Its shadow, a sundial used by the birds to tell them when to nest. Its white skin scarred by the black slashes of time. And its fine branches tenderly sketched its shape on the cold winter sky. Waiting. Watching, never complaining, doing what trees do. Thanks.
Everyone, another hand.
And you just heard Ron Chase from the 2025 Poets at Art Fest Outdoor Poetry Festival. It is 59 minutes after 4 o'clock. And before we almost immediately slide into the second hour of the show today, I should let you know that you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And just a reminder, oh, I should mention, you probably already realize this, but we also stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. A quick reminder I do at the end of each hour is just to let you know that I do upload both hours of my show each week to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. Those remain there for 3 years. And I do want to